I'm Jason Stein, publisher of Automotive News, and this is Daily Drive. It's Friday, June 19th. Very few people spend much time talking about new product during times like this, when just selling cars and trucks is the number one priority. But John Murphy, a senior analyst at Bank of America Merrill Lynch, spends a lot of time thinking about new product, even during a pandemic. On this, the 30th anniversary of the legendary study known as Car Wars, John has a lot to share. He expects automakers to launch roughly 250 new models over the next 4 years. That's 63 per year, well above the average of 40 over the past 20 years. What does that mean for consumers and automakers as we wrestle with the changes in our new world? Who wins? Who loses in this breathtaking sprint to release new vehicles? And what's more, what does it look like if the world is now a 13 million market in terms of sales? We've reached John Murphy at his home office in New York City. Hi there, John.
Hi there, Jason. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I want to start off with where you are right now. You've been on our World Congress stage several times. You've been part of many of our events. We haven't seen you in a long time. But you're in New York City, right?
I'm in my home office with my two cars, or a car and a truck, parked right outside my apartment, which is very easy to park these days in New York, which is very unusual.
You know, you're the first guest who we've had on the show, and some 70 guests, to be based in New York City. Can you tell me a little bit about what life is like there?
Well, in some ways, because we're luckily not directly impacted, it's easy to move around. There's no traffic, and if you need to get things done, you can get things done in the city. Essential services are open. Restaurants are open for delivery, so you can order a lot of great food. So for the moment, it's actually, quite pleasant, and the air is very, very clean. And like I said, there's not a lot of traffic. So, you know, in some ways, for us at the moment, it's great. Obviously, there's some great distress in the hospital system and for certain folks that are directly affected. So from that standpoint, it's a little bit frightening. But for us, it's pretty good.
You've watched the transformation of this city over the course of the last three and a half months. I can't imagine what it was like when things first started to happen. Can you describe that for us?
Sure. Well, I mean, I've lived in New York my entire life, and, you know, unfortunately going through a couple other crises like 9/11 and Sandy. But this is the first time that really the entire city is largely, you know, emptied out and people aren't on the streets. But as things are, you know, slowly reopening and restaurants are figuring out how to, you know, deliver food, and, you know, other stores have opened back up. You know, at this point, you know, it's reasonably normal. We just had retail stores open for curbside pickup, and the like. So it's, we're slowly returning to normal, but there's still not a lot of people. A lot of people are out in their, I guess, in their second homes or holed up in their apartments right now. So you walk down the street and it's still reasonably, vacant, much like downtown was after Sandy and 9/11. But once again, this, you know, spans, you know, the entire island of Manhattan and most of the boroughs.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, let's talk cars for a moment. You mentioned two cars parked outside your apartment. What's your view on where the industry is as we sit here today?
Well, I think the most important thing that the industry has done is what investors have been looking for the better part of the last 5 years or so. It's proved it can fight through a downturn, and this downturn was the crisis of all crises, and the stress test was worse than anything anybody had ever modeled, because it was a global downturn all at once in every region. So I think, you know, at this point, the industry has proved its mettle, and as far as volume forecasts, we're looking for about 12.7 this year, 14.5 for next year, and grinded to 15.5 in 2022, and then mid-16s by 2023. So getting back, you know, closer to trend in 2022 and 2023. But I would say, you know, the recovery in some ways has been pretty voracious off the 8.6 million we saw in March. The 12.2 in May was kind of refreshing. It's kind of scary to say that a 12.2 million SAR is a positive event. But it does show that, you know, there's an underlying replacement demand level that's probably in the 12 to 13 million unit level, and I think our 12.7 forecast for this year may end up proving to be a little bit conservative. And I think that the near-term issue is inventories are incredibly tight. Without factories reopening or restarting in spades, we're going to be short of inventory in the next couple months, and that's going to be, I think, a really big story for the industry.
How many times have you had to reforecast?
So as you know, I've been relatively conservative on volumes versus other folks out there. So we very quickly at the beginning of March pulled our 2023 trough forecast forward to present day. So we cut our demand forecast once, but I will admit it's been three times in resetting our production forecast just based on slower restarts. And that is, that's really where the risk I think resides in our forecast is there may be a real depression in demand that's created by inventory shortage as we go through the end of June into July and August. And I think that would probably be, the thing where we got to be careful with our volume forecast is that, if production can't get restarted, then our sales forecast is bunk and we'll have to revisit things. But we one big cut on demand, which is once again pulling forward our trough, and about three actual adjustments in our production estimates.
So you're focusing more on the lack of inventory for what is the, one of the more risky aspects of this recovery. But how about the consumer financial piece, the ability for consumers to be re-employed and buy cars?
So the 12.7 forecast we have for this year is a pure replacement demand. So 4.5% scrap rate on the total number of vehicles on the road in the U.S. So I think that that is a demand level that even with a very tough employment, consumer confidence and credit availability backdrop, we can hit. So I don't think that's necessarily that big a stretch as long as the, production restarts. I do think there are issues and pullbacks in credit availability to subprime consumers. Prime and near prime consumers are at this point not having any issue getting credit, but the subprime consumer is certainly having a tough time getting credit and there's been a tightening there. Ironically though, what you're seeing is, strength in the used vehicle market. We've heard anecdotal, stories of the $10,000 or less used vehicle, demand actually incrementally improving, which kind of indicates that, even some of the subprime lower end, need-based consumers, in the used vehicle market are able to get financing of some sort by hook or crook and are shifting in that direction to get off of public transportation. So you have this very interesting, demand bump, at the low end of the market, which is pretty good for used vehicle pricing, which itself is starting to recover back to normal.
Which car companies are most susceptible during this pandemic and the restart? Who are you looking at with a kind of a keen eye?
I would say each of the manufacturers is exposed relatively similarly for, the risk of the supply chain not being able to get back up and running and for their own, issues, within plants and how they, restack or reset, production lines and spacing between workers and the like. So I don't think there's anybody that's really, significantly behind there. I would say the Europeans, you could argue, and the Japanese, because of the long lead time on some of their powertrain components coming from Europe and Japan, may actually have a little bit, greater risk just because you have longer supply chains. But for the most part, I think it's a pretty level playing field of, risk really, across the board at each of the individual, manufacturers. You could, have some, puts and takes on some of them that may have not been so great at launches recently, like Ford. But I think, the delineation between the manufacturers on the ability to restart and get going is probably minimal.
All right, let's talk about Car Wars for a moment. You've done this in person. Of course, you've released this virtually now this year, like everything else. One interesting aspect in your annual look at what's coming is this aggressive product launch cadence over the next few years, right? That's normally the sign of a strong industry. But now you're basically saying it could be a detriment in the near term, obviously hooked to demand.
Yeah, so this is a great year for Car Wars because it's the 30th year anniversary of the report. John Cassetta was doing it for the first 7 or 8 years before I joined him, and I've been involved for the last 22 years. So it's a big year for Car Wars. What we found this year is there is a significant amount of product activity, about 250 nameplates being launched over the next 4 years by our estimates. So there's a fair amount of competition coming. I think the real story remains that you have 49%, almost 50% of your products are being launched in the CUV segment. So as we look 4 years out, the CUV segment will have 70% more nameplates than you've ever seen on the passenger car segment or the body on frame truck segment. So it would be the most crowded major segment in history. And I think that's really where there's a real rub and concern about profitability in the industry, you know, 4 years out, because obviously CUVs have been a big boon for profitability across the board between, you know, the automaker suppliers and to some extent the dealers. So I think that's really where the risk resides. One other big thing that came out this year is the dispersion between the high and low replacement rates has begun to widen out tremendously again. So if you rewound the clock 2 or 3 years, it was about, you know, 5 to 10% top to bottom, which is pretty tight versus history. If this year is about 34%, with Honda having a replacement rate of 91% at the high end and FCA having 57% replacement rate at the low end over the next 4 years cumulatively. So we could see some, you know, shifts in market share really, you know, beginning again over the next 4 years after having kind of stalled for the last 5+ years. And that's really, you know, kind of intriguing and, you know, sort of a return to these large gaps in product activity.
Let's get into some specifics of the new models that are coming over the next 4 years. Only half will now have internal combustion engines. So we're going full bore into electric or hydrogen or anything else, hybrids.
Yeah. So it's, you know, that was another, you know, big outcome. And there's a lot of nuances to even, you know, that number. So, you know, as by our estimates, 50% of all nameplates will either be hybrid, electric, and, you know, a couple of fuel cells, with only 50% being ICE. So, you know, that's not on a volume weighted basis. It's on a nameplate count basis. And it's also important to note there'll be 63 standalone alternative powertrain nameplates. So, you know, truly without even an ICE alternative. I mean, some of these are, you know, have a hybrid or ICE, you know, powertrain, you know, option on the nameplate. But there's definitely a full bore effort here. There's a couple of really important points, though. First, the automakers in the U.S. are going after price points which appear to be luxury-like or $50,000 plus or higher, with a recognition that because we don't have the regulatory push the same way that Europe and China has here in the U.S., that we'll see a greater reliance on, you know, market forces. So, you know, you don't have, you know, large incentives. So if you want to make, you know, mid to low single digit margins, by our estimates, you need to sell these things at $50,000 plus. So you're seeing stuff like the Mustang Mach-E at Ford, obviously the F-150, which comes in a couple of years, the electric version. GM is using Cadillac as the tip of the spear with products like the Lyriq crossover, as well as the Celestiq large sedan or flagship sedan. But they're also using the Hummer brand as you know, with a pickup and an SUV that will be, you know, very high priced and be niche products. But all of these products that are sort of at these higher price points are not necessarily reliant on putting out, you know, massive volume, like a whole plant of volume. But in reality, probably sort of more realistically, you know, 25 to 50 to maybe, you know, 75,000 units of volume. So the aspirations on volume are not necessarily that high because these price points are fairly high and that limits your ability to drive volume. But it's a direct recognition that you do need to get the flywheel on EVs going here in the U.S. And this is the best way to do it. And we're seeing new entrants like Fisker and Byton and you know, Lucid coming in and doing, you know, sort of taking the same tack and trying to go to the high end of the market where you can actually afford to charge for the technology. And it's kind of an intriguing, you know, shift and a move away from the Econobox toaster model of things like the Nissan Leaf.
And in GM's case, you write that they are expected to launch 12 EVs over the next 4 years. And in some cases, it may spell a bit of trouble. And how so?
So for GM specifically, and it was really interesting because we go through this study in sort of a objective, methodical way and try not to have any bias as we put the, you know, the estimates and forecasts together. What came out of it was sort of a clear focus from GM on EV powertrain. So if you were to look at model year 2022, so next year, calendar year 21, they have three products launching. So it's a relatively low nameplate launch, but they're all EVs. And in the following year, calendar year 2022, model year 23, I think it's 75% of your product is going to be all EVs. And even out in model year 24, calendar year 23, you're almost half of your products are going to be EVs. So GM has basically taken what has been a great product launch cadence over the last few years, which they're going to leverage that strength for the next few years, and shift tack towards getting the EV powertrain portfolio up and running when they're starting from a position of strength. But it does create risk because the replacement rate is going to be the third lowest in the industry over the next four years. So there is some intermediate risk as we get out into calendar year 21 and 22. I think when you get out to 23, you have a lot of CUVs launching, so they pick it back up. But there seems to be a very concerted effort. Hey, we can't, you know, product development dollars are limited. There's a finite number of PD dollars. And the reality is they think that, you know, powertrain is, or EV powertrain is the way to go for the next few years to get things running. It might be the exact right bet, and we might see a Biden administration, come in and see the, sort of the Obama era CAFE standards, come back into play. You might see oil prices ramp back up for some reason. I'm not an oil forecaster, but, you never know. So it might be the exact right play, or it might be the exact wrong play if oil prices stay incredibly low and see, you see Trump, win again in November. So it's a concerted effort. I think it generally makes sense. But you could see some players, sort of in the alternative, if Trump wins and gas prices stay low, like a Honda or a Hyundai or even a Ford, who are the three highest replacement rate companies on more normal powertrains or internal combustion, existing powertrains, refreshing their product very quickly. They may be big winners. So there's a lot of, ebbs and flows and conditional, conclusions in this year's study. But GM on a pure traditional basis looks fairly low. But when you account for this EV powertrain, if the market shifts in that direction, they're going to look very smart. So it's still a TBD on how this is all going to play out. It's a real difference, though, in the product cadence and pipelines between the automakers this year.
Finally, John, this is year 30, and happy anniversary, belated happy anniversary on it, of Car Wars. But year 31 might be your hardest Car Wars that you'll put together, I'm guessing, because when we start talking 2024 and the effects to product development dollars that could take place now, could things just change so suddenly that makes some of these predictions obsolete?
Well, I've been, like I said, doing the study for 2020. It's for 22 years myself, and Cassessa had started it 30 years ago. And I would always say the next year is always the toughest because it's a tremendous amount of work. It's a real labor of love. So it's always the next year is the toughest. But I agree with you because there is a great dichotomy sort of in the logic of, thrifting CapEx and R&D and product development dollars at the moment amidst the current crisis. However, the automaker is saying that they're not pulling back on product development. And to date, based on what we can surmise from, all the news and talking to the companies, there has not been any delays in product launches other than the 2 to 3 months of production downtime, which is not, anybody's fault. It's just a unfortunate factor of what's happened in the current crisis. You're right. It's going to be a challenge to understand if those words or the logic really ring true. And what we saw in the last downturn was very interesting, where Mulally sort of bet the farm going into the downturn, leveraged the company, and invested heavily in product, which led to great success for Ford coming out of the downturn. I think that playbook has been recognized by a lot of automakers. So I do think they're all going to continue to press on product development dollars. And I would imagine that we're going to see, maybe slightly more measured product cadences going forward, but still very robust and enough to keep what I think will be a very robust cyclical recovery going out till we get out to 2024, 2025, and the industry is back at a 17 to 18 million unit peak. So I really think that's where we're headed. I think the product launches will support that, and the economy will support it as well. So I think that's what we're headed. We're headed for brighter times ahead.
No, we'll leave it with that. Brighter times ahead. Thanks to John Murphy. John, really appreciate you being on Daily Drive today.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thanks, everybody.
We reached John Murphy at his home office in New York City. And that's Daily Drive for Friday, June 19th. For breaking news, go to autonews.com. And for a library of more than 65 stories, go to autonews.com/dailydrive. We'll be back Monday.